People in Wine, brought to you by finewinepress.com.
Every time that I feel it bad, it always comes to my rescue. Every time that I feel tired, it always gives me something new. Well, the monsters do their own thing till the curtain falls on them. But which sense does it make just to live for yourself? Always, always, don't you know that the idea's on my mind? Always, time I could get in there, she sets the pawn on the moon too. Yeah, every time my mind is empty, she's got the strength to pull me through. So many people believe in God and angels.
In February 2006, I met with Alexandre de Lyosalus at the Saint Regis Hotel in Paris. I had set up the meeting many months previously, and I had wanted to meet him in an informal and relaxed setting where we could discuss his life and work at Château d'Yquem. Alexandre de Lyosalus is perhaps one of the very few winemakers in the world who, when referring to an 88, needs to make a distinction between 1988 and 1888. Château d'Yquem has been in the family's control for several centuries. It was only in the 1990s, after a bitter struggle to prevent its takeover, that the huge multinational LVMH succeeded in acquiring a majority interest. I was interested to discover how things had changed under the family of Lyosalus in the way the wines were made, how they were sold, and how the company was managed. What happened which allowed LVMH to acquire such a family institution, and whether or not he had any regrets as a result of these events? I asked him why he thinks that the link between an owner and his or her domain is so important. And he tells us how he chose a wine for supper for the Secretary General of the United Nations at the time, Pérez de Cuellar, how his family was split apart by their desire to realize the value of their estate, about his views on the so-called Jefferson wines, whether producing Yquem is also to be rigid in one's ambitions, his favorite vintages, the happiest period in his life, his relationship with his brother. I have left this interview very much as it was. I've decided to leave it at the considerable length of an hour and a half, since with the technology we now enjoy, you, the listener, are at liberty to dip into the interview as you wish and return to it when you want. The important thing, I think, is that the interview is complete. I would like to thank Alexandre de Lyosalus for agreeing to talk with me and by not requesting any preconditions to our interview. I'd also like to thank the Hotel Saint-Régis in Paris, its staff, for being so welcoming and accepting to be part of this interview. Further details of this program can be found on our website at finewinepress.com. My name is Fabien Kopp, and I hope you enjoy my lunch with Alexandre de Lyosalus.
Tell me about your ancestor, Joséphine de Sauvage d'Yquem. She was a formidable woman, and she was even thrown in prison twice, I think.
Yes. My family, which bought this this estate in 1590-something, well, they start an adventure which took 6 or 7 generations, I don't remember, to become what it was when Françoise Joséphine died. She was the last generation. And progressively, they start with a few plots, which were well chosen,
Oui, c'est très bon.
And these plots were enlarged, very last one to be bought were bought by Françoise Joséphine, and the ultimate was bought by myself. It's not the best. She was very more, but it was very convenient. I will come back on it. She really understood something very important. Furthermore, she added to IKEM probably one third of what it is today. But furthermore, she accepted that idea. She built up the new shape, which I developed afterward. She understood with Garros, her intendant, that it would be wise to obtain a better, a more regular result with the harvest. In fact, during that, she passed from a late harvest wine to a vendange by waves, a vendange par tri successive. And this is a great step.
And at the time, had botrytis become part of the winemaking process already?
I think it's during the end of the 18th century. Before, it's obvious that in that area, they had discovered a kind of miracle. The wine is better when harvested late.
It's an interesting contradiction, isn't it? Because normally, rot of a kind is normally a sign of death, isn't it? So, botrytis for you is the complete reverse of its normal significance.
A certain category of rottenness. You have to distinguish, and this is important for the harvesters, to distinguish the good of the bad, le bon grain de l'ivraie. The grey rot, everybody knows it in viticulture. It's known that it destroys the not only the harvest but also the vine itself. Instead, it's what destroys everything in the vegetation, the flowers, the fruits, and so on. And this fungus, it's a tiny fungus, can be positive, and then it's a noble rot. But in fact, the two live together. And normally, in a normal year, I would say, not an exceptional one, you have the two together. And so the pickers have to do three jobs. One is to harvest the good berries, to have it in their basket, to select the bad berries, to reject it out of the basket, and not to injure the berries which are for the future.
And how did the estate therefore come into the family of the Lioselus?
Mm. This ancestor Françoise Joséphine married my ancestor at the time. The misfortune is that he died training himself as an officer, horse riding. She became a widow after 2 years. And she became also an entrepreneur and a very good one.
Would you say that, in fact, there were many things that she did which still continue today as part of the tradition that she'd laid down, or has much changed, in fact, since the 200 years?
There is no real big change. It's a question I'm often asked because there was so much changes in for the red wine or for the dry white wines. There is no real change for certain, except the tiny daily changes, improvements, which you find in common life and also in viticulture. Progressively, we have abandoned the horse to plow. We have now tractors very adapted, very comfortable too, very convenient, very soft, flexible. And you have many changes. The presses are different, much more effective, but doing the same job with the same cares, with the same softness. The treatments have changed. We have we do not dream of La Bouillie Bordelaise, which was not so good. In fact, you could not avoid the Bouillie Bordelaise when I started in 68. And progressively, it's completely abandoned for much better treatment, very softer, which are adapted exactly to the vine, and we use much less than before.
May I just ask you to explain what La Bouillie Bordelaise is?
The Bouillie Bordelaise, I don't know exactly the cocktail, but I know that it's full of copper, and the copper, there is a memory of in the soil of the cooper, which remain for years and generations. So we are very happy to have left it.
We're going to come back to the subject of the winemaking at Yquem, but tell us, you weren't initially the person who was going to take over this estate in the 1960s, is that right? Your uncle perhaps had other ideas at that time?
He asked me to come in 67, and all the family was wishing him to have, as he was close to 80, yes, and all my family was wishing to, he could have a nephew with him to know what was his belongings and his occupation. So he took me, and I lived with him 1 year, and he had a very strong character, which was very fascinating to me. And unfortunately, he died after 1 year, so this was a big shock to have to manage all that, knowing that he had not left definitive decision. So I had to deal with the complicated situation, which we had to manage again in the 90s, with the problems which lead to the selling to LVMH.
So the problems which led to its sale ultimately were really, the seeds were sown in the 1960s, weren't they?
Yes.
And when you arrived, though, it hadn't always been your intention to work as a winemaker, had it?
I could say that my older brother should take that situation, that job. But obviously, too, it was known that he was unable to face such. So it was a great stress, a great fear when my uncle died, that he could come, because it's not his way, it's not his knowledge. So my family was very happy to find me, to come on and to take care of Yquem and Fargues, and also the third domain, which is Uzan.
This is a dish of scallops that smells very good, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I should try the wine. Yes, to your pleasure.
So,
so all your winemaking knowledge you really learnt on the job, so to speak? Or?
I was. The first thing I did was to subscribe at the Institut d'Oenologie to have a better knowledge, and I had to stop after 3 months because my uncle died in December. So I have a slight level of, I am not an engineer, I'm not an oenologue, and once I had the visit of a Chinese coming from Boston, and he told me, visiting Yquem, you know, I have a problem because I have, I'm owner of 150 hectares of vineyards in China, and I am not an engineer. And I told him, me too. He was so pleased. He was happy. That was the best of his visit.
And what was Bordeaux like in that period, in the 60s and early 70s?
The problem was to have a new link with the négociants, which were convinced that ICEM should disappear because of the cost of the way it was managed. And I said to myself, what made the glory of ICEM will do it again, and FARC will follow. And it's a bit long to tell you every year progressively, but I wrote it with the book of with Jean-Paul Kaufmann.
L'art moral d'ICEM.
L'art moral d'ICEM, where 70 was a normal year, 78 was a very not a great year, 69 was normal, not great, 70 was medium, and 71 was very good, but very small as a quantity. 72, a complete disaster. 73, a small harvest of a non-memorable wine. And 74 was a complete disaster, plus the big crisis with the négoce in Bordeaux. You remember that time? That was I was able to sell 4 cases of ICEM during the year.
4 cases.
4 cases, and I had a nul harvest. So, progressively, there was a demand for that wine. No. And in the meantime, I took the decision to lower the quantity which was sold to the négoce. That the prices rised, like for every great wine in Bordeaux at that time, Lafite, Latour, and so on, the classified horse, and then figures were developing. The stock developed, the prices developed, the chiffre d'affaires,
the turnover
developed, and the benefits developed, and so I was able to give my family more results than ever.
The dividends,
yes. So they were perfectly happy until the time where they found that ICEM had taken such a value that they started to think to make an OPA, a reverse OPA, and then you know the suite.
We're going to come back to that. I'd like to just return to your earliest days when you first arrived at ICEM. Obviously, there was a whole team there who'd been working together producing the wine.
Mm-hmm.
It must have been quite difficult coming in, something of an outsider perhaps, and developing relationships with them and proving that also you were somebody who was capable of holding the reins of France's greatest wine estate.
Yes, I need them, they need me, or they need someone with the name and with them.
Merci.
Thus, I learn progressively, but one of the important jobs was the relations with the world of Bordeaux, the négoce, with the press, the media, the public relations generally, which I did living in Bordeaux. I was not at ICEM or FARC. Then much later, I settled in FARC, and my office was in ICEM and not in Bordeaux.
There were some difficulties with the winemaker who was then there at that time. Was it Pierre Mellier or
the winemaker?
Yeah, Régisseur.
There were difficulties with the regisseur. There was also some difficulties with the cellar master, which there were stop relations with them, because I had for the benefit of ICEM, I had to stop the collaboration. That was a difficult time, but I took the good decision and started with a different organization. The cellar master was very typical. it was becoming the state in the state. She was, this was a young woman, very bright, but very humble at the beginning, and progressively with the visitors and with the contact with the media, she became a queen. And at such an extent that the spirit was changing, and that was a very, very bad. And so I took a knife and cut in once the relation to avoid something which was absolutely bad for him. So these two decisions, two change for the rest. I had to change the whole staff, and progressively, that is, I was very proud of what was done, because all the change were well done, and the newcomers were rapidly adopted the spirit of Ikem.
I mean, now you have an absolutely excellent team there, don't you, in terms of the
I have an excellent team, very, very excellent. And they know, and they are not IKEM, they are just a member of a team which make IKEM. That is very important. On dit en français, personne ne tire la couverture à soi. Tant que j'étais à IKEM.
To what extent has your perspective on life been determined by being an aristocrat or an aristocrat of France?
No, but it's part of the well, this is a remark which I found in some medias which are anxious about aristocracy. Well, the problem is to manage an estate and not to look as a small king on a small kingdom. The fact is, there was a strong link at that time between the domain and the owner. Now it's changing, and it's less. You have some domains whose you don't know the owner. There is no. Some owners do not wish at all to be named, and you just see on the label Société something. At that time of my ancestors, it was obviously different, and I was one among some others, and finally I was the last to link the name and the domain. But if you look on the label of IKEM, there is just l'Ursalus, like on Farg, and on the cases of Farg or IKEM, there is not my name, but Marquis de l'Ursalus, which is supposed to be someone else. And in fact, it's my older brother, but this was the custom. So it's not a question of individual, it's a question of signature. It's the word which used Jean-Louis Dumas at Hermès. He was saying, I give a signature. Hermès is a signature. And it was linked, obviously, to the far roots of IKEM at the 16th century, where it was beginning. It was linked to all these membres du Parlement de Bordeaux who made the Grand Cru de Bordeaux. All these Grand Cru, this is very unique in the world. They are the result of the fantasy or the goal or the objective of parliamentary people. Shortly we will talk of winery instead of saying a château, a domain. You see the change. So I like the way it was when there was a link between Lafitte and Lafitte. There was a strong link with the Trotschild family, but there is no link between Pinault and Latour. There is no link between Corinne Menzelopoulos, is very related with Margot. But many domains are looks like having known her. There is a lot to say about that, because a great wine is not an industry. It is an artisanat on a great scale. And an artisanat is linked to a man, which is the at the center of a wheel, is not the most active or moving, but he makes that the wheel turn in the regularly. Mm-hmm. And he defines the heading. When you have to say no to a crop, nobody wants to take this decision, except then the whole team was turning to me saying, you have to, silently, you have to take the decision and take the right one.
Following on from my earlier question then, If somebody accused you of being an elitist, how would you rebuff that? Or perhaps you are.
Hmm?
Or perhaps you are.
Elitist?
Yes.
We had to be elitist, the whole of us at IKEM, in that team. It's also it's the same in the farm. We are dealing in a very rural world, and some people are very simple, but they have somewhere that knowledge what is an elitist decision. For instance, with Guy Latry. Guy Latry was the cellar master, and once we had the visit of Mr. Perez de Cuellar, the former UNO secretary, and I thought wise to offer him a bottle of his birth year for the lunch. And I looked on a book, which year was born Mr. Perez de Cuellar. This was 1920 something, I do not remember the exact year. But I know that nobody knew.
Ici, vous me le dites, hein, quand vous voulez que je le serve.
Ça, c'est super.
Voilà, je vais vous les servir comme les plats vont arriver.
Hein. Okay. So, il... I looked on the books, Michael Broadbent's book, No Words, the cellar archives of IKEM, No Words. And so I went to Guy and said, how is 1920 something to welcome Mr. Perez de Cuellar? No idea, never tasted. Said, you have not any idea by did Roger Bureau told you something about this millésime? Said, no. Well, the best now, well, the best is you go and take a bottle. I know there is some bottles in the stock. Take one bottle and we will sample it together. Say, okay. And the day after, we were the whole team around that bottle and the glass table. And Guy served, decorked, served the wine, and everybody sipped, and nobody said any word. So I said myself, it's not really very attentive. I would like to know what is their opinion to confirm mine. They were wishing the reverse. So nobody said a word. So I finally said, well, it's not exactly something we could serve to Mr. Perez de Cuellar, because he would feel himself weak. I think this was maybe an attractive museum, but it's a bit finished. Then Guy started to talk, and then he started to say, you should serve it at the end of the meal. You should not be quite disappointed. You see the verb. So this was very, very prudent. But I found myself, in myself, that probably Guy was right. So we served this wine at the end of the meal on some soft cheese. And this was perfect. And Guy explained, you are not so critic when you have already sipped some of the wines. So you could really enjoy it as it some treasure. Thus we did, and Mr. Perez-Écuyer was very happy to sip his wine of his birth year.
That's a very nice story, very nice story. Tell me, you met a great many important people in your life, and it's not always the most important and those with the biggest names that perhaps have the greatest influence on one. Who has been, do you think, the greatest influence for you in your lifetime?
There is one person which I remember. I name this person in this tiny book. This is the father of Jean-Claude Vrina, who came with a group of great chefs. There was Bocuse, I quite remember, from Roanne, Trois Gros, and all the best chefs at the time. They came at Ikem, and after the visit of the chef, Vrina, I don't remember his first name, took me apart and said, you know, he took me by the manche,
sleeve,
and said, we are very happy to see that you keep Ikem, you do not change anything. And I found that I was on the right line, listening that. And I was always kept that story in my mind. There is a lot of others which I saw, some great lovers, but who are also critics. Among them, there is obviously Bipin Desai, who is a great friend now. Well, there is a book to write.
And I was wondering, it's not often the same person, so from whom did you learn the most?
I remember, I answer this question in the former. Once I was offered by a neighbor. He was selling his estate. He was losing money, and he told me, I will sell this estate, and I want you to know it. And I said, well, you know, he came never buy for enlarge because it's a policy. We do not wish to enlarge. I didn't give him the reason, which was it make a bad atmosphere in the vicinity because they would say, the small owners would say, we cannot enlarge, or where the great one are buying. And another reason is my uncle would have said, this will not be understood by the amateurs, the lovers of Ikem. So I said, no, I do not wish to buy them. And when coming back to Ikem from the city hall, because at that time there was the mayor of the village, I was said, but you know, you should think of that proposition because this is an occasion you will never have before a few centuries. Because we would love at Ikem to have the tractors going straight instead of turning around some pockets which are included in the vineyard of Ikem. said, this is a good reason I had not think of. I know that is the man who was naming his wine Enclavé Yquem, which is a bit faulty. And obviously we would save a lot of gasoline going straight. So finally I went to see at l'Institut d'Oenologie Ribeiro Gaillon. I told him, I have a problem, I would love to have your advice. The problem is, I'm offered these plots. I would know if it is right for Yquem to enlarge with these plots which have never produced any Yquem. And he said, well, I will send the specialists in the ground, another specialist in the vegetation, and we will see afterward and give you an advice. When he came back, he answered, this is a very positive opinion. I think it is very wise for you to buy these plots. There was a few. And I said, well, for which reason? Because how can I defend this change in Yquem, where everybody is looking at any change, fearing any change? I told him, but is that soil typical of Yquem? That there is no typical soil of Yquem. Yquem is a patchwork of different soils. You are just adding a new parcel. Said, okay, but if I understand, in your opinion, Yquem is the result of a kind of cocktail of different soils, then we will change the cocktail, and this is faulty. For the great amateurs will never understand this change. Merci beaucoup. And Ribeiro Gaillon answered, no, because your cocktail is always changing every year. Each year you have some plots which are making an excellent result. You keep it for the great wine. Or if there is none, you do not bottle the wine. And there is plots where occasionally you have bad results, then you reject it. So I'm very convinced that there is no problem. Your cocktail is changing every year, and at the limit, when any plot is giving a good result, you do not make any wine. And so on this explanation, I bought it, and there is 10 hectares, 11 hectares, which were added. And I wonder, I have not asked the question recently, but I asked, I would know if ever these plots made any drop of Yquem, because we dislike it, they are very newcomers.
that is perhaps one of the distinctions, isn't it, between Yquem and the Chateau des Fargues, that Yquem is a bigger estate, and therefore, drawing on its assemblage, it can make a wine perhaps in a difficult year, which Chateau des Fargues cannot.
We have the same bad years in the same decision. There is no 92, no 72, no 74 at Fargues. But there is not the same variety, the same diversity of ground at Fargues, obviously. 15 hectares against 113, there is no comparison. The great privilege of Yquem, the fabulous privilege of Yquem, is the way it has been accumulated by these Sauvage d'Yquem. The Lursalus have been able to maintain up to the time when they have divorced stupidly, when my brother accepted to give the majority, to sell what made the majority for LVMH, pushed by my nephews and cousin this was completely stupid. It is a miracle of choice. Really, it has been done, which is impossible now. It has been constituted by a 6 or 7 generation of Sauvage de Kem, and afterward respected on all way by 6 generation of my family. I do respected the soil, I do respected the people working, and I do respected the people loving that wine. That is very important, and this what made and continued Ikem. My uncle was absolutely against having any process like chaptalization. He wanted the wine to be really the result of the wine and the choice of men.
Tell me about your first vintage at Ikem. That must have been quite an interesting time for you. You remember it well?
Well, I was then trusting very much the team, of which I had to learn instead of the reverse. I was a bit naive because 69, I was very busy with the reorganization of the everything. 70, my objective was we keep the heading. So it was known, it was obvious that the whole team on both estates were making the same job. Then the decision I took was in 72 not to make any wine, to accept a small crop in 71, a small one in 73, and not make any 74. And then I know that some people from Ikem told in 75, I think we are going to the wall. And myself, instead of thinking that, I took the archives of Ikem and I remade the count of my uncle, which had left them that idea that you can trust that on Ikem you always have at least an average of 82,500 bottles every year. Because in 20 years, this is average figure on 20 years, and during 20 years you have had all damage possible. The frost, the hail, the rain, and so on. So I was confident, and suddenly I found that I was going to the wall because I would selling this amount of bottles. I would go to a time when I had nothing to sell. And that was a disaster, because I could not imagine to take a hat and ask some money from all my relatives. I knew that they would not understand. And so I start to thésaurise. I don't know how the word, to keep some part of harvest, to an amount of each harvest, to have a stock in which I could take to supply the market.
So yeah, you're talking about developing a kind of a cash flow through retaining stocks.
In bottle.
Yeah.
A bank, but not finance, but bottles. Or barrels.
Because the economics of running an estate like Ikem must be really quite peculiar, they're quite particular. Do you have people who advise you who understand?
So, when I have had, I was been invited to many schools in the world to explain, and I went once to Paris at l'ESSEC, and there I was explained that how we manage Ikem, and the professors told me this is very interesting what you did. We would come to Ikem and visit again to see some more of your policy. Did okay? No problem. They came and said, we would like to make a car. Because
case study.
Yes. Because what you did is exactly the reverse of what we teach. Said okay. So I answered the question they asked, and they were at home at Ikem, and then they made that case, study case. And the study case is very important. Because excellent.
Good. Yeah, it was delicious, wasn't it? C'est bon.
Difficult to enjoy that and talk.
I'm sorry. Yes, I apologize.
And the wine too.
And the wine too, yes. It's very good, isn't it?
So the case exists now. And it makes me happy to have it, because it proves, it has been said in some medias that the managing of Ikem was a disaster during the last years. It proves that over 30 years, not only I have maintained Ikem, kept it in the among the Bordeaux wines, but enlarged the economic life of Ikem.
On the other hand, something which is very interesting is that you don't enter the en primeur. You didn't enter the en primeur market for Ikem.
So, the market is such. The market is completely speculative. But I don't think it's very, very good.
What's so special about Ikem which favors the formation of botrytis? And I was wondering if you felt that the woodland around the estate also helps in that way, or it has any special role to play? Role in the development of...
Well, I'm not very convinced. Yes, there is, but this is a role which is given afterward. In fact, we don't know exactly. We have always said that we live on the benefit of the Ciron River, which is a tiny river, and the Garonne River, which gives some fog during the harvest time. I'm not really convinced. We have some other. And there is some region who are promoting their wines, which benefit of the fungus, the tiny fungus, the Botrytis cinerea, and they have no such a Ciron. Or there is other problems involved. But anyhow, the ground is very important, certainly the meteorological condition, the wind is very important, and also maybe the forest, it's one of the parameters.
to what extent is the wine from Ikem helped by any because you have a late harvest, so even without botrytis, for example, the grapes will dry a little on the vine. And to what extent is that an important part of the wine in Ikem, the passerillage?
Oui. There is some passerillage, but you cannot obtain 20 degrees of potential alcohol with our varieties and with our condition without the help of the fungus. We absolutely need the fungus, and the fungus is important during the last degrees of potential. We do not harvest if we do not reach 20 degrees of potential alcohol. Coming from 18 to 20 degrees, we have calculated that we lose half of the volume of the harvest. So it's a big cost, but it is a cost to pay to obtain really the best of the best.
I'd like to talk to you about another aspect of technique of making Ikem, which I think is quite complicated, often shrouded in mystery, and I think does present problems for Ikem at certain times, which is the fermentation of the wine. Mm. I mean, particularly, I think I recall something written about the 1990 vintage.
The fermentation is very, very simple. In fact, it's a natural process which happens. The problem which happened in 90 is very typical of the of many things. First, 90 was the vintage which compete with the maximum obtained in the in that area was in 1893, where we had 25 hectoliters per hectare. In 90 we were close to that figure, and this is a very generous year, very well, the yes were happy and so on, so happy that the problem happened. In 60 barrel started a new fermentation. Then let's imagine a worker of the chai, Eric, who was coming and passing in front of a barrel where he understood this, listened a tiny noise. And that was a small drop, top, 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 something, nothing. He took the topper off to listen more carefully, and he understood there was some bubbles coming on the surface of the wine. Then he came to the cellar master, and it was the time of Guy Latrie, and Guy immediately went to probably Sandrine Garbay. I don't know if she was there. Anyhow, she was the most knowledgeable in terms of university, with which I'm very careful. It's not a question of university to produce Ikem, it's a question of care. She immediately came to the barrel, said we would check the other barrels. We have checked all the barrels. In fact, we have checked all the barrels of the cellar. This means 2,500 barrels of Ikem. We had immediately to check. 60 of them were starting a new fermentation after a few years. Thus, we have had to stop the process. They were put in another shell. They were added some sulfur, which is an antiseptic, very common antiseptic in vineyards. We have stopped the fermentation for them and for the all others. And these 60 barrels were sold as ordinary wine, not to pollute. They had too much went on a new fermentation, so they were not proper for a kelp. That was the risk, which is a risk which happened sometimes, every 10 years, every 15 years, you never know, but which could happen, so it must be checked. And this means that I was wishing to need people very attentive to just check a tiny noise.
How long do you age the wine for Atikem?
Atikem, we age it 3 years and a half around. Sometimes it's a bit shorter. But we like to go to that level when we have really achieved the exchange between the oak of the barrel, the tannin, and the wine. And also we have achieved the sedimentation of the wine, which is very important. You could do it industrially. We have many means. That is not wished. For a wine elitist, we like it to have it through time, and the times make a good alchemy.
Probably more than most wines, but certainly for certain kinds of wines, a good cork is an essential part, isn't it? You take a lot of trouble finding.
We took the best, which means that this is the most expensive. But that one can say, Ikem is not well managed. But at my time, we were taking the best, and there was, I must confess something. There was a very real connection between the fournisseur, suppliers, and Ikem. In terms of barrels, in terms of cork, in terms of bottles, in terms of many things, they were keen on having that customer satisfied. And with Sandrine Garbay, the actual cellar master, she checked every stock, every lot of corks to be sure they are the best of the best. We check, Meyer is checking the bottles very carefully. We are checking the barrels. We have suppliers ready to supply every year 400 barrels. They have a stock of some barrels which they can supply immediately. When you know that a barrel cannot be stocked for 1 year empty, and you cannot fill up a barrel with water, so you must use it shortly. And so it's a small problem which is solved forever, because since one century it's like that. The supplier of barrels is watching the demand of Ikea. I have seen, probably in 90, probably also in 95, some of the years where we had a huge crop, the supplier was there, a call, the day after, the trucks were there with new oak barrels.
That is extraordinary, isn't it?
It is important because in these barrels take place the fermentation. So we have the barrels, not like in the Médoc.
And what's changed most in the last 30 years while you were at Ikem, would you say?
A new cellar downstairs. What else? Tiny change, just tiny change, not really great change.
Obviously, an important part of all the wine, apart from the winemaking and the history behind it, is ultimately the drinking of it. How Do you like to drink and appreciate Sauternes? Well, obviously, particularly Ikem and Château de Fort.
I think it's a wine. I have seen so many few lovers. It's not. It's a wine which is very obvious. Many visitors at Ikem have told me, "Oh, you know your wine. It's the best wine, the best gift I can give to my wife. She do not drink anything else than your wine, the Ikem." Many, it's a wine which is very easy to adopt because it's plenty of natural sugar, but at the same time it's difficult to taste. It should be known that this wine develops for a long period. It can be aged 50, 100, 200 years. Some Ikem are still, if genuine, are still valuable. 1806 is excellent, 1811, and so on.
So, well, can I just interrupt you, actually, because at that moment, if you're talking about old wine, and we're just looking at a wine we're now going to drink, which...
Weinbach. Ah, les Falaire, les Sœurs Falaire. Et le millésime, c'est 2001.
Whether they're myth or not, the wines that Jefferson bought for Washington, and whether you have any views on the authenticity of any of those?
Jefferson was obviously bois du cépage.
C'est bon?
Sœur Falaire. Ah oui, c'est bon. C'est un autre monde. Heureusement, il y a beaucoup de monde. Jefferson Ward had an accurate curiosity. So he developed, he bought a lot, and fortunately, we know it thanks to his mistress. This wine, at the same time, had a great, a bit after, had a great success in at the court of the Tsar of Russia, at the Emperor court in Japan. So this was the big steps of a success for Sauternes. So it's known that Jefferson was a lover of Ikem, a lover of wine, but among wines, Ikem. And he came, and so there is a story not quite achieved. It has someone found some bottles supposed to be of a sailor. Hidden during the revolution, and which you find on the auctions. I'm not convinced of that, but anyhow, it's the oldest ones which are turning in auctions. I don't think that this is the goal, to age the wine so much, at least.
Do you think that, in some way, producing Ikem is to be rigid? Rigid, inflexible.
First, I would say, you need... there is two kind of people. There is the people who want something they already know, which is constant, and we like to see, to hear Mozart, Bach, Baroque music and so on. And you have some people who like to see always new, and new about new beside what, I would say. When a new owner come and buy an estate, the first thing he says is, "I will renew," and it becomes something like a obsession. So he enlarges the vineyard, which is not the case at Ikem. He will renew everything. So he will renew the roof. The problem is to say Zorro is now here. Zorro will do a better job. This was not my policy. My policy has been during 35 years nearly to say Ikem is constantly here. This is the same, except that we have better tools to do as good as. I think it's more humble, but it has always its value.
Which are your favorite vintages of Ikem?
This is 1947.
You have to answer that.
1947.
And
if you really offer the open the door, this is 1869.
You weren't at Ikem in 1947. I'm not sure what age you had in 1947. So my next question was going to be, did that coincide with a happy period in your life? Which was the happiest period in your life?
Well, there is one which I never harvested, which one is very famous, is 67. I think I'm amongst the people who like better the 75, which is more elegant. And I think a great wine is not a wine powerful, it's a wine which is elegant. And 75 is of this kind. 88 is also, 1988, it's also an elegant wine. And since, we will see for 97.
My question to you was, what was your happiest period at Ikem, would you say?
Oh, this was, I would say, between 85 and 90, when I feel that I had recovered from a difficult period. And I could dream that the future would definitively settled.
You weren't able in the 80s, therefore, to predict, to see into the future as to the kind of problems you would face.
Yes.
In the 90s. You never anticipated those problems.
I was fearing. I have had an occasion to buy at a very low price the neighbor Riosec, and at that time I very much turned the problem, and I even went on with the owner of the time to say how he told me, how would you like me to harvest for you if you really if you can buy, I would be very pleased, but I will make the harvest in terms of your policy. And so I was very close. And I thought, I cannot, I never said so, but this was in fact my feeling. If I do buy this estate, I will just have a revolution in my family. They would think, do we take too much risk, and that would be a disaster. And in fact, I was right, because the disaster came later, when I didn't buy Rio Sec, but later the value of IKEM made them think, oh, we take too much risk, we must sell.
During all the time that prior to the offer which became accepted by you from LVMH, did you have a very poor relationship with your brother, Eugène?
But since ever, the relationship with my brother are very specific and difficult. So it has not really been a change.
And you finally accepted the offer of LVMH. What made you decide to do that in the end? There was a very long and protracted, and it must have been very costly legal case, wasn't there, to stop them buying?
I accepted because I could not guess that the justice would confirm that there was an indivision between indivision, I don't know the word. Well, indivision in French. So my brother had no right to sell without my permission.
I see, I understand.
So this means when the tribunal,
yes, the court
decided there was a division and my brother should have asked me the permission to sell. I thought maybe we. And in fact, it's too late.
Because after the court case, in fact, and I mean, it must have been several years after, the court finally affirmed your belief. Is that not correct? That in fact, the court affirmed your belief. Is that not true?
Your belief?
In fact, your supposition that...
My position?
Yeah,
yes.
That actually there could be no division between the shares that you held and those of your brother. Mm-hmm. But that came too late.
Yes. Yeah. Not too late, but it was such a such a problem. It's I made an agreement because I could not guess the court would take such a decision.
And how did you find the relationship with the company? It must have been quite different from what you were used to before. They've introduced some changes which you might have resisted.
I don't know if there is any change. I do not take, I have no responsibility. I think there is a time when the page is over. So for me, this is a time which is finished. There was a time when LVMH were thinking they need me because they need me not mainly because to make it acceptable, there is a continuity. And now they have worked very naturally on a transition, on a change. Now it is said that before this was the Middle Age, now this is the Renaissance. Well, we will see the Renaissance. I'm not really... I think when there is a new owner, it takes the decision. That's all. It's his responsibility. It's even if my family still owns 30%, that means nothing. The responsibility is in the hands of the new owner.
Some things I know are difficult to talk about, but one of the things that they did was to change the age of retirement. The age of retirement.
Of the
retirement.
Oh, yes. No, and that it has never been changed. I like your question, because I can say the time has never been changed. The time of the retirement has been taken in when the new society has been decided. The statute has been adopted in April, if I quite remember, in April 99, and it was decided that the limit was 70 years. So I knew I had to leave. The problem would be how to leave. And it has been decided that I would be joined with Émeric de Montaud, a very nice gentleman chosen by the LVMH, who came to help me to learn how is the management of ICAM. Then a new decision came just in May 2004. Monto was leaving for another job, and a newcomer was coming to manage ICAM, and myself who said that I could be in connection with the, I don't know what, and I said, well, you do not need me anymore, then I leave, and I left.
Bernard Arnault is on record as saying that he would change nothing at ICAM, that it was regarded as a jewel.
That was a word for 2 years, 3 years.
But they well, first of all, and they've changed nothing except, I suppose, how they market the wine, but they put ICAM on the El Primeur market.
Well, the Primeur is, I do it in fact, you cannot avoid, even if it's stupid, to come back what was done in old time. My grandfather sold 1900 ICAM in 1900. He sold 1901 in 1901. And as he was needing money for his son, because he was a tutor of his son, my uncle Bertrand, he sold his 1902 in 1901. So you can do whatever you wish. You can say, I will have a nice crop, please pay me now. You prefer, it's very flexible. I thought it was right for the customer to have some bottles which he can sip and say, I love it, I will buy it. Instead, you are said, do buy your wine immediately because it will be more expensive next year. You will taste it within a few years. I'm not convinced this is a really completely clear.
There were plans, I think, to introduce a second wine from ICAM, is that correct?
I think it has been avoided.
It has been avoided, yes.
They have understood it was a mistake, and it took them a short time to understand what I had examined for, think of for a short time.
But it tends to suggest that the promise of leaving ICAM unchanged is perhaps a rather... A broad promise. A broad promise.
The non-change of ICAM?
Yeah, because you know, you say you're never going to change ICAM, and then within a few years you leave, and then they think about doing a second wine, and then they abandon that idea. This isn't somebody who's trying to make ICAM.
There is a new owner. People will understand through time if he is trustable or not. I do not think the best. When my friend Émeric de Montaud came at ICAM, another good friend told him, oh, this is fabulous, you will take the charge of ICAM. It's really a wonderful job. You have nothing to do. So, will that be understood in the future? I don't know.
What would you like your testament to be, Alexandre? How do you wish to be remembered?
Oh, somebody who like to make the best of what was under his power. The best wine of that ground, of that a knowledge of that fame, of that culture, the background culture in the vicinity of Ikem. It's a series of miracles which I was keen not to destroy and maybe to promote. Make the best of what is under my responsibility. I like to make the best wheat, for instance, with the Bazadès cows, which we grow up in Fargues. I like the idea that we have probably the best Bazadès in the vicinity.
Bazadès being?
Bazadès is, you should know it, because it's the best cow to plow in the past, but now they do not plow anymore, and to make a nice meat. There is some nice race, how do you call it?
Race, thoroughbred. Race.
There is a Charolais, where I was born, and there is the Bazadès.
You've once said that Ikem doesn't actually belong to anybody. It just belongs to those that love.
Yes,
it.
I was very much thinking that we have to respect, and I was trying to organize the visit of Ikem to respect the visitors, and I gave to Mark the idea that all these visitors were to be respected. And sometimes I had to say to Sandrine, who told me they do not respect women, said, well, please do respect them, they will finally respect you.
A difficult question, always for anybody to ask, and or anybody moreover to answer. But the question is, do you have any regrets?
Regrets. No, the only regret is to have not been able to invest the other members of my family in this. This domain is this fabulous domain, which is the, I think, one of the more the peak of the wine world. That is really a mistake, a raté. But reciprocally, I don't know how I could have succeeded in that process. I think this was a mission impossible. I have tried to invest my nephews. This is not the wine world, but this is the background. It should have been more lively to have all these parents involved into Ikem. That is c'est une faillite which depends of two generations at least. Not only mine.
And do you have a regret also that your children will not be involved with Ikem?
My children have not understood the problem. They were too young. And so this is also involved in that failure. They were not involved. Now they start to understand, but it's too late.